Hi there and welcome. This is Conscious Living. I'm Wendy Garrett. Thank you for tuning in. I appreciate your time. And I really, really am so amazed at the places that this show goes to. It's worldwide. This is a phenomenal opportunity we have with the internet to be so connected with people we may never, ever meet, but their stories reach across all boundaries. And that's what this is about. So again, thank you for tuning in. I'm glad you're here. And I think you're going to find this hour interesting, especially if you've had any kind of hunches, inklings, inspiration, intuitions, those moments where you know there's something more than what we all take for granted every day as a 9-to-5 thing. The guest I'm talking about and referring to here is Richard House, Dr. Richard House, the book Between Now and When, How My Death Made My Life Worth Living. And this is a phenomenal story. We're going to let him tell the story, but what got me was that this is something that not everybody has the courage to do, because it requires basically rewriting your life script, the one that you assume is going to be, you know, success, lots of money, power, fame, fortune. And then you kind of go off the deep end and say, but I heard this, I have a calling. I have somewhere else to go. So now do I call you Richard or Dr. House? And you're the other House.
Please.
Not the TV House.
Yeah, you know that I get a lot of kidding about the TV House, and what I tell people is I'm a heck of a lot nicer than that guy.
Oh my gosh. Thank you.
But call me Richard.
Okay. You got started. This is when you were a kid. You had a little bit of a preview of things to come, possibly. You know, I don't know how, if you set it up for people. This isn't just a one off. This is something that you had at the back of your mind, in your heart, in your soul, that there was something you needed to do, and you got a preview.
I sure did. Wow. Do you want me to start with that?
Well, if there's a better place to start, go ahead, and we'll pick that up, because I, you know, you're the one with the story, you know.
Well, you know, we were just talking about something that I think is worth mentioning at the very beginning, and that is that so much of the time, we're giving little hints about life that, we could call them spiritual, but it takes us away from our mainstream. And we do have to have the courage to follow that. But as my story will hopefully demonstrate, somehow the courage is there. And, you know, if you just except with your whole heart that there's something going on that is more than what we are aware of here on earth, then your life will become immensely interesting, I'll tell you. So, yeah, I was 7 when just kind of out of the blue, I was just minding my own business. And I had what in Buddhist terms is sometimes called Satori, which is this incredible awareness that everything is one, that we are one, that there is nothing that is not God. And, you know, at that kind of tender age, you know, I figured everyone felt that way. But I don't think it happens very often. And of course, I understand that now.
Well, and it, even if it does, it sometimes it's pushed from your memory and you don't know the relevance of it. It's that thing of, okay, well, that was really cool. You know, they have that saying that before enlightenment, do dishes, after enlightenment, do dishes, or chop wood, you know, something like that.
Chop wood, carry water. One of my favorite phrases.
There you go. See, there it is. And it's so it's like, it's so beautiful. It's so blissful. It's so ordinary in that extraordinary that you don't realize how absolutely phenomenal it was. Does that make sense?
It not only makes sense, but it's exactly the way it happened. And here I'm experiencing this for probably only a few moments. Who knows? But it charged me with a new understanding of who God is and what my relationship to him was at that time. And I had to find a new name for myself because it, you know, Richard or Dick, which is what I was called in those days, just didn't seem big enough. And so I came up with this name, Icken, of all things. And that was what I called myself at the age of 7. And when my mom heard me actually referring to myself in this way, she had something to say about it. And then I understood that my feelings about everything were different than what most people feel. And so I reverted back to Richard and just got on with it. But that feeling of being one with God was with me for a good 7, 8, 9, 10 years.
Well, that problem, though, of immediately your mom going, reality check, hello.
That's exactly what happened.
Yeah. You know, usually that's that lifted eyebrow and that very stern look of, I'm not taking any of this, okay?
Well said. That was exactly the way it was.
So with that, though, you know you had that. You knew it was in you. And then that had to, you know, be in some way, shape, or form underlying everything that happened after that. But then you went on the road to success. The well-traveled,
What happened was that one day I lost it. In other words, this feeling just disappeared one day. I was probably about 10, 11, 12. Was just walking home from school, and all of a sudden I was all by myself. I was no longer one with God. I was just Richard. And I'm going to tell you, it was the first time in my life I was scared. Because if we don't have some connection to something bigger than us, then it is a very fearful existence. And so it was a tremendous loss. But then what happened then, and I'm going to kind of skip through this. A lot of this is detailed in my book because I think it is interesting for people to see how directed our lives can be. But when I was about 13, once again, growing up in California, skateboarding and surfing and all that, one day I just had this incredible stillness that came through my mind. And in that stillness was a message, which I perceived was from God. And that message was, you will die when you're 33.
Well, that's a positive thing to lay on a 13-year-old. Oh, by the way, yes, just thought you should know.
That's kind of the way I viewed it. And it was somewhat alarming. The moment, it was alarming. I was actually drawing at the time. So my mind was focused on this pencil drawing that I was making. And the drawing was not one that I had intended myself. And it was only afterwards that I looked at it and saw that it was a Christian cross. And I thought, wow, does this mean that I need to go to church?
But
I saw that there was something else. It was something more than that. It was bigger than religion. And so I wasn't terribly worried, but I did ponder that message. And people have asked me if I believed it or not. And I'll have to tell you, Wendy, I believed it with all my heart.
Yeah.
I knew I was going to die at age 33. End of story. And don't worry about it. Pick up your skateboard and start going, And that's what I did.
So you became a doctor.
Yeah.
Just in case, a fallback.
But what I was going to be a dentist. My dad was a dentist.
Like
he was a well-regarded dentist, as a matter of fact. And so I had planned to go to dental school. But and this again is how, if we listen to this voice that speaks to us, it'll lead us where we need to go. But one day I was in I went to Butler in Indianapolis, and one day I was in the gardens there, and I just once again heard this direction, and this direction said, you need to be a doctor, not a dentist. And at the time, it was incredibly, it was outlandish. I mean, I just didn't have the grades for that. But to make a long story short, sure enough, that's exactly what happened.
See, this is what I think, the synchronicities and the things behind the scenes, when we accept that there can be sometimes intervention or flukes or miracles, whatever, things that we can't explain because our minds don't work that way. There's so much extraordinary that can happen to connect dots that when we think it's impossible because nobody's ever done it like that before. Here you are doing things that conventionally weren't going to be possible. And yet there you are doing it and experiencing it. I was going to ask, so did that sense of connection, did you feel anything beyond that? You're still getting these prompts. Do you have something?
I'm still getting the prompts.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very good question because I was skeptical. You know, first of all, it was, you know, I had a 2-3 average or something like that out of 4 point, you know, which is barely good enough for dental school. And it was sort of like I made a little bargain with this captain that seemed to be helping. Well, if you can get me into medical school, I'll do it. You know, that kind of thing.
Well, that's a bargain.
Yeah. And so what I did is I quit the fraternity. I quit messing with all the other things in life. And I just hit the books. And I raised my acume to a 2.7, which was still awful. But when I presented myself to the medical school admission committee, they could tell how much I wanted it. Because by that time, I was passionate. And I sold that idea to them. And I got into medical school. And so when I got the announcement in the mail, I said, okay, God, I believe it now. You're in charge of my life.
Okay, you got this. Well, the thing is that these other issues that then presented, you're living your life. Everybody would consider by all external view that you're a success, that things are just super. You've got the motorcycle, you've got the house, you've got the kids or the wife, I'm sorry, the wife. You've got all the trappings of success. What happened?
Oh, well, you know, whenever there's a lot of positive, there's also a negative. And the negative in my case was addiction. You know, I was I segued from being a heavy drinker to not a falling down drunk, but I certainly was on the road to alcoholism. And you know, that's the negative that made all the positives sort of seem so grand. Because I could look at myself and see this huge problem that I didn't know how to fix.
Well, you got help with that.
I did.
That would be what the 13-year-old heard was the big doorstop.
Yes. And so what happened was I started, and I'm sorry to your listeners to be graphic, but I started puking blood. And I was seeing things that weren't there. And I was seeing demons. And, you know, it was, it was, even though I had all the trappings, I had wealth and position and power and a beautiful wife and a child. You know, I had this other thing going on. And my physical form started to dissolve, basically. And so I was admitted to the hospital, and the doctor came in, and after he got all the tests back, and he said, let me ask you, Dr. House, do you drink?
He wanted your version. He'd already seen the stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
yeah. What I had was any doctors out there, I had bleeding esophageal varices, and that only occurs in people that are so far down the pike that there's usually no return. There's nothing that can be done, and so I was exsanguinating through my swallowing tube, the esophagus. And so to make a long story short, I had 18 transfusions, and mostly from friends of mine, because all through this time, I had people that I loved that loved me. You know, I was not the usual drunk. And thank God for that.
Yeah, you had a circle of support.
Very much so. And so anyway, the doctor came in and he said, it's hopeless. There's nothing we can do. We're going to stop the transfusions with your permission. Say your goodbyes. And that's it, buddy. good luck next time. I describe this in some detail in the book, but what happened then, of course, is that against all odds, I did survive. I have what most people would call a near-death experience. It was absolutely lovely. And here's my first message to listeners. Dying is wonderful.
It's also permanent.
I might take issue with you on that one, but we'll talk about that later.
Get back to that. Back to that.
Yeah, we'll get back to that. So anyway, I experienced the incredible sensation of comfort for the first time in my life, really. After I detached from my body, I was up above, floating, you know, as they all say. And as I'm in this blissful ocean of love, I felt nothing but just positive, wonderful feelings. And if I could have gone on to complete my death, I would have done that willfully. And I would say that my understanding that's been developed over 30, 40 years now is that this is the way everyone's death is. When you detach from the physical form, there is a feeling of relief, of bliss, and, you know, it's just wonderful. But anyway, as I'm in that state, once again, my captain gave me a message, and I knew this was God because I was right next to him. He said, you will heal and work for me. It was actually a little different words, but that was basically the message. Yeah. And, you know, if I could have stood and saluted, I would have. It was like, okay, I'd be happy to. And so I went back into my body. And, of course, you can guess the rest of that. I was the bleeding stopped. My lab stuff came back to normal. And a couple of days, I was on a regular ward. And within a week, I was out of the hospital.
And your doctor's going, holy cow.
Yeah.
What happened?
Yeah.
Well, he told you not to drink anymore. He said, you do. Yeah, you're a goner. And you kind of broke that just a tad, but there was a reason.
Yeah, there was a reason. And it turns out I probably wasn't an alcoholic, even though I felt that. You know, I rarely say this because it's a very dangerous notion to people that are in the clutches of addiction. Once you stay sober, you need to stay sober. Once you get sober, you need to stay sober. And I did spend 2-3 years in AA teaching that very message. I did a fair amount of speaking and so on. But anyway,
I understand that. Believe me, I understand. Yeah, it's a thing of
the good part.
There's a fine line, and it's your body. Once your body says it can't handle it, there's a reason.
Very much so. And your life path needs to be entirely different. You can't go back to that old self.
What I also wanted to just go back real quick, because you had the warnings. And when you addressed the screaming yellows, that's you kept getting this. And I think that's also part of this. This is that intuition, that body, that other part of you that's saying, excuse me, doctor, hello, did you check out? You know better. But that, I love the way that correlates, because that's like the chakra. That's the soul saying, 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, you know, and that's the good part. If we pay attention, even the most dire illnesses can be reversed if it is your life path. But it doesn't happen without a lot of suffering and a lot of discipline and willpower. And like you said before, you know, support is so important. You can't do these things on your own. You just can't.
Well, so this is when you begin your world tour.
Yeah, but I want to go back to one thing, because this is central to sort of my message to folks these days.
Yeah.
After I got out of the hospital and went through all the things that you would expect, you know, I ended up alone in my big old house with my wife gone, my daughter gone. I still, thank God, had my practice. But one day I was looking down, I was sitting on the couch feeling sorry for myself, you know. Mm-hmm. And I was looking down at the floor, and all of a sudden, the floor tiles became the most beautiful thing that I have ever seen on earth. And the beauty was so luminescent and so startling that it made me gasp. And that experience lasted for just a few moments. But and the reason I want to mention that is that it was my very first entry into the next level of human dimensions. And it's what in some traditions are called the subtle world. Mm-hmm. I used to call it, and still do, the beautiful land. And it was such a departure from what I'd experienced all my life that if I needed any additional reason to continue on my journey, I don't know what would have topped that. And I started walking in that special land, that special beautiful place, for hours, days, sometimes weeks at a time. Now, the reason I want to mention that is that it goes back to the title of my book, Between Now and When. And the now part is ordinary consciousness that includes things like addiction and financial insecurity and pain and suffering. But the when is this next level of consciousness where humanity is heading, where we live in this other world, where there is no worry, and where pain is minimal, and where everything is so beautiful. How about that?
See, that's extraordinary. And that's a way of putting it that says, everybody's going to want to know, how do I get there? But without going through all the stuff that you had to go through.
Oh, you want the shortcut.
Everybody does. You know how that goes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you're going to give them a different route. You're going to give them a different route. That's okay.
Yeah. Well, no, there. Yes, that's right. There are shortcuts. But even if we do absolutely nothing, it will happen anyway. You know, I think a lot of the folks that have been on your show, no doubt, have talked about the new age that's coming after we get rid of this one. Mm-hmm. Or the age of Aquarius, or, you know, however people want to, heaven on earth, that kind of thing that's been prophesized in the Bible. That basically is what we're talking about, that our whole society, all our world cultures are going to experience that at some point. Now, your question is, how do we as individuals get there quicker? Because Lord knows when that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Why don't we just go into that for just a moment?
Okay, wait. Into that for a moment, then we're going to have to break in the middle of the break. So what I want to say is, for right now, for people who are listening and want to get the book, Between Now and When, How My Death Made My Life Worth Living, is available anywhere. You can Google it. You can go to Richard's site, richardhousemd.com. One way or the other, there's a lot of stuff we're skipping over as we're going through this interview that really gives it a lot more context, and you understand how real Dr. House is, how real Richard's journey was, and how he did have the prompts. And these kinds of things are happening to people all the time. Some people are calling it a conscious ascension. I get an expanded consciousness, awareness of things on multi dimensions, not just people, but animals, trees, plants, that they call it panpsychism, I believe, where everything has a consciousness and everything is connected. The Native Americans called it the web. We're seeing this, and you had a special introduction because you dedicated your life in service, and that's what I want to get into. When we come out of the break, we'll go to that, but you will also explain what you just started to allude to, what it was like being in that other world. I've got 2 minutes, and I know that's is probably going to be a little bit more than 2 minutes. Does that make sense?
Oh, it does make great sense. And you said that well. Panpsychism, I like that.
Yeah. Can't remember Plato or whoever. It's been around a long time. And the science went more of a materialistic view of everything that is touching, seeing, sighting, all this physical stuff is the only thing that's real. Well, and now they're going back to, well, maybe there's something to this other thing of their things have a consciousness. And when you're getting into remote viewing and other psychic elements, PSI abilities that say we can do more than we think, and it has nothing to do with the physical stuff you can touch. It has to do with being in two places at once, in body and spirit and mind. And that is where we are, I think, unfolding on a quantum level every single minute of our day right now, which is absolutely phenomenal. And that's why I wanted you to tell your story, because you give us a glimpse of what it's like to be in these in-between states as you are living your physical life and connected to that other element of soul and psyche and spirit and God. And that you are a testimonial for. Have I established that okay?
Oh, man, that was great. That really was. I hope you're recording this.
I hope Matt hasn't turned it off. Okay, so
that's fantastic. Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break and we're going to be back. But Dr. House, now I'm going to let him talk now because he had a story and I interrupted, but it was worth it. Okay, you had to hear the details. And now when we come back, he's going to give you his incredible perspective of how this works so you can follow along. Conscious Living on Power Radio.
As a young teenage boy, I didn't even know what autism was. How do you even spell that? A few years later, I heard that a friend's cousin's son had been diagnosed with autism.
I still wasn't sure what that really meant.
When I went to college, my roommate's brother had autism. When I moved to the city for work, my best friend called me and told me his son had been diagnosed with autism. We were both in shock. I still remember the day I walked into the house and saw that look on my wife's face. I knew something was wrong. I'll never forget how I felt when she said, "Our son has autism."
Autism is getting closer to home. Today, one in 110 children is diagnosed with autism. That's a 600% increase in the last 20 years. Learn the signs at autismspeaks.org. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
There's a natural resource that exists everywhere on the planet which could benefit all of civilization. Yet it's been largely ignored. That resource is women. In many of the world's poorest communities, women are denied a significant role. So often their talent and potential remain untapped. At CARE, we found in country after country that empowering women is one of the fastest ways to improve conditions and help end poverty. That's why CARE is helping provide girls and women with an education, opportunity, and a voice worldwide.
I am powerful.
I am powerful.
I am powerful.
I am powerful.
It's a source of power the world can no longer afford to overlook. She has the power to change her world. You have the power to help her do it. Call 1-800-521-CARE or visit care.org.
There's hundreds of fun and simple things you and your family can do to live a healthier lifestyle. Here's 20 of them. Eat less, eat slower, eat smarter, eat your fruits and veggies, stop eating before you're full, up your fiber, lower your calories, get off the bus early, do some gardening, do jumping jacks, take the stairs, take one, not two, take on a new sport, take a long walk home, walk instead of drive, bend, stretch, reach for the stars, climb the monkey bars, skip the fudge bars. Search We Can online to find more ways you and your family can get healthy together. A message from the Ad Council, HHS, and NIH's We Can program.
This is a guided meditation on parenting. Take a deep breath in and let go of the time you and your son played basketball and you attempted to slam dunk. Or when you hit that piñata into your neighbor's yard. Let it go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Hi there, I'm Wendy Garrett, and my guest today, Richard House, Dr. House, the nice Dr. House. Between now and when... Yeah, well, you know, it's that nice positive spin. You've been around the block a time or two and a whole lot more than Dr. Other TV House. This is real, okay? This isn't pretend. This is like when you had a real vision and a real calling, it happened in a way that I don't know if you could have written or projected or imagined it the way that it came out. You did die at 33, that near-death thing that the doctor said your liver shot, see you bye. And then you surprised everybody because somebody else had another plan. They just basically said that the fun and games and ducking out of everything is over. Now you're going to have to actually pay attention and do something, as if doctoring isn't.
Yeah.
So when I interrupted you, you were talking about that state and that way of seeing being that is also part of this if we want it.
It is. The idea that there's a lot more going on than meets the eye, I think, is a valuable take-home lesson for everyone. And periodically, we get little hints of that, I think. A beautiful sunset that gets right into our soul. A love relationship that just elevates your consciousness. These things happen. But there actually is a dimension that is almost indescribable, that is very close to the one that we experience on a daily basis. It only takes a little shift for us to experience some of the delights of that dimension. And as I was walking in it for extended periods of time, you know, one of the things that I noticed, and you'll appreciate this, Wendy, is that at the time I was going through all these problems. You know, my wife was involved with someone else. You know, I had some financial problems, all these things. And when I shifted into this state, I could think of all those issues, but there was no worry. There was no emotion attached to it. It was like, oh, this is your given. This is what you've got. Let's work through it. And then when I would leave that beautiful land, those worries were right there to greet me again. So what I would say is that this beautiful land was truly that. It was the sounds were more crisp and clear and beautiful. The vision was incredible. Smells were there. The touch was different, everything. And so that place exists very close to where we live every day.
When someone is talking about having extraordinary experiences and that expanded consciousness, you said you've identified some of these levels. Did you have a name? I mean, are there more than one level like that you went into?
Yes. Oh, man. Are you familiar with the chakra system?
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I was thinking that yellow, that screaming yellow was a chakra saying.
Exactly. I thought that's what you said.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Uh-huh.
Okay. Well, there are seven well-known chakras and a relatively new one that's called the eighth. Now, these are the main ones. There are a bunch of little ones, too, that we're not going to worry with. But let's just stick with the seven for the moment. So there are seven dimensions. Each one of these dimensions is actually a chakra. And our own chakras are connected to them. And so we walk around with all seven dimensions within our system. Isn't that something?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what the yogis in India do. They are trying to work through each level, because the final pathway to unity with God happens to be working backward through the chakra system. And so that's why they do crazy things like stand and stare at the sun and, you know, can be buried alive and all these things that you hear about. Well, they're actually true, because the yogi's consciousness is centered on one of these higher dimensions. Now, to be honest with you, I didn't directly experience anything beyond the subtle. The higher levels, you know, there are three, and depends on who you talk to, of course, but in my view, there are three of the subtle levels. There's a fourth, which is the heart chakra, or the sort of pivot between the subtle world and the mental world. And then there are two mental dimensions where the archangels are at work. Did you ever think about what the archangels do all day and what the angels do? You know, these are the kinds of intriguing questions that when we go on a intense spiritual journey, you don't find this stuff in books. but it is available there for anyone that's able to discover it on their own. And so a lot of the information that I'm telling you is a sort of a compilation of what other traditions have talked about and what I discovered on my own through my journey around the world that you alluded to.
Well, and you stayed in three places that are considered sacred and that people go to for spiritual experiences and to basically expand your awareness and in some ways do penance, because some of them require a hardship. At least that's what we would consider here, when you went into Australia and stayed in a tin bathhouse with a bunch of spiders. And that's a hardship and penance. So, but that was your introduction. Yeah, that was your introduction. Okay, so get us from where we're at this moment, where you've had these divine, awareness, and yet you also have a journey.
A current journey, you mean?
Well, the one that took you on that little trip around the world, because to America and saw the place that had been set aside for that kind of thing here, it had a whole different element to it. So I just kind of want to get into the differences and the reasons why people go to different places, because the energy is different.
Oh, it's so true. And in terms of the next highest level that I was talking about, the subtle worlds,
yes,
they're more easily accessible on islands, I discovered. And so Spirit, my captain, led me to Kauai. And so I stayed there for 6 months and meditated and went through some cleansing experiences, to say the least.
Yeah.
And you're right. There is a significant amount of negative experience that's generally required for those of us that want to enter these higher dimensions, because it's sort of like washing your hands before, a meal. You have to be clear of all the sort of dross that that people accumulate. And down the road, I will, or in this interview, I should say, I will talk about how the shortcuts that we talked about. You know, what can people do that doesn't involve going to Kauai or Australia or New York, you know? But,
or India, where you decided you were going to walk the entire way, and they said, no way, you are not, you're going to die. The guy said, he's going to die the second day, don't let him out of the house.
That a disappointment, too.
I know, you were so determined, I'm going to do this, and again, that's penance. This is, okay, I'm going to carry it, I'm going to go, it's going to take me forever, but I'll get there, you know, and 17 months later, maybe you would have arrived, but he said, no, 2 days out, and you're going to be, so let's just stop this before you become roadkill. And you did honor that. I was like, okay, the higher spirit spoke, and so you deviated from the course that you had, you assumed was supposed to be it. I can get there by taking a train, and then you did.
that was a good synopsis. Yes, yeah. In India, I was staying at a very powerful ashram set up by Mayor Baba, one of the true saints of the time. Although he dropped his body in 1969, he was instrumental in a lot of the direction that I received on this journey. Everyone has some kind of help, whether it's the impersonal aspect of God, of which it's a very complicated orchestration. You know, we think computer stuff is complicated. I'm telling you, God in all his various levels and manifestations is puts the internet to shame.
Well, if you look at the world, everything we can see here, this is it. This is all of it. And the complexity, the universe, everything. That's how complicated, and it's all connected. And until you get to a certain point, you don't realize it comes through every pore. It comes through every air, every atom, every subatomic particle. And then you realize, God is big.
God is very big. Yeah.
Huge.
You know, and yet we have this feeling, you know, just living ordinary life, that we're alone, you know, that God is somewhere else or doesn't exist at all. And sometimes our terrible suffering and poor circumstances are the reasons we come to that idea. But what I would say to folks is that if you persist and do the best you can with your circumstances, eventually you'll climb out of that hole.
Well, and it's not just that. It's a thing of look for the helpers. Look for the helpers all around you. Because no matter what their cloak is, no matter what they're wearing, whether it's somebody who's homeless or somebody who's a magician or somebody who's a super hero or somebody who's, you know, the down the street, the person who's either the philanthropist or the extremely rich and wealthy, we put labels on all these people. And yet each and every one of them has something to offer us in the way of a help, an insight, a push, a pull. And that's where I think we get lost when we try to put people in, well, this is one I won't ever listen to. And it's, yet they have such a gift in being able to, they're here, we see them. So why, what's important? And when you're saying that you went on this, did you ever know anything about Meyer Baba? Is that, did I say
no,
the right thing?
Well, no, not really. When I was just starting off in meditation, I had a buddy in AA that told me that there was this fellow named Meyer Baba in the East, and his message to mankind was, don't worry, be happy. And as soon as he told me that, I said, ha, what a simplistic thing to say.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so I pretty much ignored that. But later on in meditation, I found out that there was more to the story in that. And so that's why I ended up in India at his ashram. And I found out that he's very much involved in this change of consciousness. And so, you know, you're right. We have lots of helpers. We have lots of people that are working on higher dimensional activities like I do. And most of us are pretty well hidden in the folds of humanity. There are a few people that you would recognize as doing this kind of stuff, but most of us are pretty well hidden. And that's the way it needs to be. If somebody
yes.
is a flashy guy driving a Lexus and is preaching in, you know, and so on and so forth, he may be real, but he probably isn't. And those of us that really understand how things are doing and want to help generally are pretty quiet about it. So
well,
why am I talking to you?
No. You're pretty busy. You're otherwise entertained. You don't have to worry about flashing all of the look what I have and look what I've done and all this. I understand what you're saying. I've been in the presence of people who have that other agenda. And it can be very seductive. I've watched people lose lots of things as a result. And not only that, the one I'm thinking of was also responsible for some deaths. And it was a very, I guess, sobering thing to see how influential people can be to others who have no connection and who respond by having somebody else do this for them because they don't see that there is a connection. That's why I wanted you to share your story, because you're a very, very good example of how these connections are right here and they're present. And if you listen, then it can become a larger presence in your life.
Yes, I agree with that 100%. And there is no one who is listening to this that can't get there.
Yeah.
You know, there is no obstacle that is so great that we can't grow. And as a matter of fact, I'll segue right into what I was going to say about sort of a message to listeners. You know, a lot of people that I encounter say, well, I could never do that because I'm so filled with anger. Or I am a very selfish person. Or I have a great deal of pride and so on. I would call all of those non-virtues. Are you with me on that? I wouldn't call them sins.
Yeah. They're a challenge.
Yes. Now, these non-virtues, lust, anger, greed, hatred, pride, selfishness, jealousy, those are our pathways.
Yeah.
To the opposite, to the virtues. And almost every one of these non-virtues can be countered by love. You know, what's the opposite of anger is love. What's the opposite of lust is love. The opposite of hatred is love. And then there are other things like compassion, charity, selflessness, patience, surrender. And those are the goals. And every one of us has non-virtues that we can use to to grow. And once we grow, we don't have to have perfection. We don't have to attain perfection. But as long as you're trying, then all the help that's out there that you've alluded to will be available to people that are trying hard. And pretty soon you'll find yourself living in a little different space.
You are such an amazing presence. I can tell just part of this has to do with, there's an auditory thing. There's also an energy component that if anyone is listening and they're in this kind of a space, there is a potential for elevation. And that's how these things work. When you've been around somebody or in the presence of somebody who has done as much work as you have, Richard, then you give that energy as a byproduct of just being, because you've done a lot of the work that helped you ascend or attain an expanded presence. And so just being around and by and influenced with your words and your teachings, people can gain a boost, a jump, a shift in their own awareness. Does this make sense to you?
Oh, yeah, you're right. I don't talk about it like that because, that almost sounds like ego speaking. But, you're absolutely correct. And that's why I'm still practicing medicine. This morning I saw 9 people, I think it is. I'm looking at my schedule now.
Yes.
And I have about 7 or 8 after we finish speaking. And that's why I do it. I'm way past retirement age. But, it is my delight and duty to try and help people. Now, what you're doing is equally as amazing because this energy, and as a matter of fact, we didn't even talk about all this energy work that I do, but right now you should see my left hand. the whole time we've been talking,
yes,
I've been sending this stuff out. And mm-hmm. for those that don't understand that, fine, it doesn't matter. But, this business of distant healing that is so true, we can heal at a distance through intent. I used to think it had to be over landlines, that somehow the wires were involved. But then we went to cell phones and it still works. And, I think now it doesn't even require a cell phone.
No, it's that something.
Go ahead.
They've got the science now. Just in the past week, that was where they were able to make a quantum connection with something way out. They had to wait till it got to a certain point in space. And it reacted, and they're so excited now because this is like the spooky action at a distance and a scientific peer-reviewed thing that they're going to be able to say, look, we have this, it's tangible, it's real, and that's part of our evolution. And that, that's what the shamans have been doing for centuries. That's what they have been doing. And what right now the Aboriginals are saying, we can do this, and us Westerners who were schooled differently had to go backwards before we could go forwards to see, oh yeah, this is even better. Yeah. Your work is just being you. And even though you have the label of doctor and you have certain things you go through, it's that elevation that you have done in terms of working on that spiritual aspect and that expansion that you bring to the equation whenever you connect with somebody, whether it's in person or whether it's like this. And so anyone who listens to this right now is benefiting from all of that element of your expanded being. And you don't have to see it. You don't have to know it. It's there one way or the other.
Well, you're right, and this type of stuff is contagious. In the good sense of the word, what was it, the first President Bush that talks about 1,000 lights?
But
yeah, that's the way it works. As soon as one person has an elevated consciousness, there's a ripple effect that spreads out from that soul, particularly when there's so much negative stuff going on in the world now that all that negative sends the positive farther down into manifestation. And so when things get very dark, that just means the light shines brighter somewhere else. And so this time is such an exciting time because we're right on the brink of, a change in consciousness. And so all the people that are interested in this sort of thing, all the people that are out there listening, and all the ones that want to dedicate their lives to something greater than themselves are actually helping in this effort. And like we've said, you don't have to travel around the world, but it would sure be a good idea to look at your own non-virtues and see what you can do with them.
And you work with chakras. And so we're going back to that, the yellow was trying to get your attention. The yellow was saying, so when people see these colors and sometimes get inundated, there are different messages that come in. And sometimes it's language, sometimes it's a scent, sometimes it's color. But all that stuff is information in your own personal biocomputer saying, all right, there's a need for this. And so if I need the color magenta, it says I need to expand that compassion element. And whether it reflects inner or outer, it just is. So if I don't try to make it too logical, I realize, okay, if I can just bring that color into my essence, then I have healed something that was calling my attention. I don't know what it was. I'm not going to know, but I will feel better. That's the result. Does this make sense to you?
This is what we call intuitive living. And you're right. If you're open to the idea that there's stuff going on all around you that is for you alone, and even though a lot of the experiences are negative, these precious ones come forward too. And when you're willing to change, and then your consciousness just leaps forward.
You wrote the book trying to give people an idea of how very real this is. What has been the result? How have you changed since the book came out, just in your own awareness, in your own progress?
That's a good question. Of course, what I have found is that for me to keep my feet on the ground, I got to work hard. And so, I think we talked before the interview about going to the Grand Canyon. That was my fourth trip.
Yes.
So, I meditate twice a day, and I do the yoga class once a week, and all that kind of stuff that people know about. I work on my own chakra system. And so what I'm aware of is the food that we put in our bodies, the tasks we put our bodies through, all of that is all part of the same thing, is that our bodies are so that our consciousness can grow. Our life experiences are so that our life can expand and grow. And so our creativity, our sensibility, our compassion, our love, these are all things that are manifest through our physical form. So we have to address the physical form. And I've been more and more aware of that, that if our physicality is in lined up with our consciousness, then we can grow even faster. And as I've been able to do that, then the people that come in and see me have much better results. And so I've learned that. The other thing that I live on a farm, I think is a good way to describe it. Two nights ago, I sold two of my goats.
Uh-huh.
And have a good garden and all of that. Keep your feet on the ground. That's what I try hard to do. And then, as you alluded to, there are spiritual places around the world. And if you're drawn to some place, and it doesn't need to be a well-known place, for instance, I think Las Cruces, New Mexico, is a very powerful place. But most people would go to Taos. And so it's different for everyone. If you're drawn to a place, go there. If you need to stay at home and tend babies, do that. My son, by the way, lives right next to me on the farm, and he has four children. They're all under the age of five.
Oh, a house full.
Yes. So being connected with people, there are stages in life where we need to be isolated and in solitude and meditate and so on. And that's a very special time. But taking care of children and taking care of a garden and so on are just as important. That there's nothing that we experience that is not for some purpose.
All right. So those are the shortcuts. Now, we got to the part where you said we would have to come back to there is no final death. And we're only like a minute and a half out.
Okay.
Sum it up.
We're only born once, and we join God once. The trouble is there's an awful lot of activity that goes on in between that. So our journeys are more than one lifetime. And that's an awareness that I had very quickly. Of course, there are probably at least 40-50% of the folks listening to this that already understand that or can buy it. So our lifetimes allow us to experience everything that there is on Earth. And that includes being male, female, straight, gay, rich, poor, suffering, and full of bliss, all these things. So the duality, it goes way back to the very beginning. Of course, we don't have time to go into that.
We're going to do another show. We're going to do it. You got two more books coming out, okay? So let's just save it for another show.
Okay.
How's that? Okay. All right, Dr. House.
I'll let you finish up.
Thank you. Dr. House, and you're getting the book right now. It's going to be Between Now and When. How My Death Made My Life Worth Living. And you heard a whole lot of living in that, okay? So we'll have Dr. House back. He's got two more books coming out. We don't have to do it around the book. We're going to do it around the everlasting life being, all right? Thank you for listening. Conscious Living. See you next time.